food. Tonight's cheer is for Rafael Schlemer and I am Pamela Butler. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of halacha, a very little bit of halacha, and then general idea, hashkafic idea about the 3 weeks or about life in general. So, this year, Tisha B'Av, 9th of Av, falls on Shabbos. So we don't fast on Shabbos, therefore we push it off till Sunday. Sunday, of course, starts before Shabbos actually finishes in terms of, it's like Havdalah after it's already dark, but therefore we've got to be careful to finish Siddur Shlishi in time. You're not actually eating on the fast, even though you can't do any of the morning, you don't take off your shoes, and you don't do any of the signs of mourning, but you don't eat after the fast. But the question is, what can you and can't you do on Shabbat, which is the 9th of Av? Tisha B'Av has 5 different restrictions, like on Yom Kippur. In addition to those restrictions, there are things like sitting on a chair, sleeping on a comfy bed, and learning Torah. So basically those things do not apply on Shabbat, they're only on the day of the fast. Everything is pushed off. The question is whether you can learn Torah in the afternoon preceding Tisha B'Av. Historically, the temple was actually destroyed. The temple was actually destroyed in the very end of Tisha B'Av, just right before the 10th of Av. Really, the burning was on the 10th of Av. So when we're fasting, is really the time of the major destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara says that we fast on the 9th normally because the beginning of the destruction, the beginning of something, is the most critical time. Therefore, we're fasting then. So it makes sense. Says Shulchan Aruch. If Tisha B'Av falls on a Sunday, or Shechal B'Shabbat, right, or it falls on Shabbat, and it's Chelach HaShabbat, and therefore we fast the day after, or Chal B'Asar B'Shotei Yayin, the Suda Mavdeket. Normally the Suda Mavdeket, normally the last meal before you start fasting, has to be an egg and a bit of bread dipped in ashes or something for invisible sitting on the floor. Here it's Siddur Shlishi, so you can have meat and you can have wine, even though during the 9 days you can't have meat and wine.
So you don't have the
Siddur Mavdeket? You don't have the Siddur Mavdeket. You do, whatever. The Siddur Mavdeket is your regular Siddur Shlishi.
Uh-huh.
And you can have whatever kind of food.
You
don't need ashes and eggs. And even though during the week of the 9 days you don't have meat and wine, but Erev Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to have meat and wine. You can have, normally you can't have more than one cooked dish in the Siddur Mavdeket. Here you can have as much as you want to eat, as many different foods as you want, and there's no specific Siddur Mavdeket. So that's good. I mean, it's long enough Shabbat that you can fit in the lunch and the Siddur Shlishi, but maybe some people are going to have a lighter lunch and a bigger Siddur Shlishi to get through the fast. I think obviously the most important thing is drinking rather than the eating at this time of year, which for some reason Tisha B'Av always falls at this time of year. We should be thankful we don't have to worry about Ramadan, which is also the month of Av this year. Yeah, but it's raining. It's pouring with rain. And you're not going to get home anyway because the traffic's gridlocked because of the stupid Olympics. So it's irrelevant that you start until 10 o'clock of year, whatever. Again, source number 2. V'nagu shlo l'mo v'erv Tisha B'Av mechato v'eilech ki medvarim mutarim b'Tisha B'Av. During the week, normally when Tisha B'Av falls, the minhag is not to learn Torah on erev Tisha B'Av from midday onward, except for the things which you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, which includes all the fair things, the prophecies of Yirmiyah, the book of Eov, the psukim in Malachim that deal with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara in Gittin that talks about destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, those things you'll have to learn on Tisha B'Av, you'll have to learn erev Tisha B'Av, but they're not other things normally. Lachin im chal b'Shabbat, and therefore, it says the Shulchan Aruch, if erev Tisha B'Av is Shabbat, then ain omrim pirkei avot, we don't say pirkei avot. V'kein nazo halacha lo yitzal erev Tisha B'Av, we shouldn't go on a nice teal on erev Tisha B'Av. Pleasure, fine, okay. But on Shabbat you can do anything. The question is why the restriction of learning Torah apply on Shabbat when none of the other restrictions apply when it's Erev Tisha B'Av, and the Mishnah Berurah doesn't really like this halacha. He said, the reason normally that you can't learn Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av is the Torah mitzamechat alev. Torah makes you happy, which I suppose in and of itself should be a Musa message, because it's not only a way of escaping from the army, but it also makes you happy when you learn Torah. Mekomakom, kol zeh eino medina. This is not the technical, the strict letter of the law. So I'm going to be Erev Tishvav medina kol achamisha inuim, because on Erev Tishvav you're allowed to wear leather shoes and eat and drink and what, all the things you're not allowed to do. Shabbat starts at night, doesn't start the afternoon before. So why? So technically you can know whatever you want on Torah. The real reason that they forbade learning Torah on Erev Tishvav is because there are other things you can learn. So it's not really a hardship to learn to switch. Instead of learning this book, you learn that book instead. So, yeah? Yes.
But you can only learn
Matzitabah
until you meet
your
son on
Shabbat. So on Shabbat, you're right. There's two separate things.
Oh, okay.
And you're right. That's the problem.
Okay.
That's basically the problem. That the only reason, I mean, the Mishnah Berurah kind of made this up a bit, but he says it's a strange situation where you can do anything you want during the week, anything you want to Erev Shabbat, except learn Torah, which is seems a bit back to front. Why should that be included? So Mishnah Berurah's answer is that since you're not really being deprived because you can learn different Torah, then that's why they banned learning regular Torah on Erev Shabbat. On Shabbat, you don't want to start learning the sad things because it's Shabbat. So therefore, all that's happening is you're not saying Pirkei Avot, but what's that being replaced with the fire multiply. So the Mishnah basically says, Amnam, Yesh Ezra Achronim, Shtikukum Ma'od, Alamin HaGazet. Many of the Achronim were not happy with this halacha. This minhag, sorry. Rishon Lekol HaRashal, the Yom Shal Shlomo, says Shlomo Luria, Katvu Alav, Shalamat Ba'atmo, Achachatot, Vetikam Lachim Bezeh. He says, it's not on Shabbat, this is nothing, any time. He himself learned Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av, and he permitted others to learn Torah. The Gam HaGrav, the Biorokha, Tav, the Chumri, the Terehi, the Zulnagar, and his commentary on Shulchan Aruch says that it's extra stringent, and people nowadays don't know what that means. But the Grav thought there was something that was just too machmir, it was Chumri too far. The Kain, and Ma'amah Mordechai, this is from Marich Mazeh, and Ma'amah Mordechai, who says, goes on at length, Tav, the Hum, Nidhi, Haber, Nidhi, Bittul Torah, La'alom, Dim, Shemit, Rashlim, and Mod, Divayim, Mutayim, Mitzvah, Shabbat. This causes little Torah because people don't learn the things they can learn to Shabbat, and they don't know anything at all. They see it as a day off.
No
chiyuv to learn Torah to Shabbat.
Yeah,
the name is chiyuv. They get it by Yomam V'Layla.
Right, but I thought on Tisha B'Av, understood that there's no obligation.
It is true that you're supposed to be focused on the morning and the sadness, and learning Torah may distract you from that. Yeah, go tell me what he said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's Otik the mitzvah, Patam in the mitzvah. You're being doing the mitzvah being sad.
Yeah,
okay. If Rabbi Nemesov says the learning's right, I'm not going to argue with Rabbi Nemesov. Well, I did once, not me, but I was at a shiva house in the old city once, Rabbi Nemesov came. And the halacha is, Birkat Chaanim, you don't do in a shiva house. In Chutzlaret, they don't say in Chutzlaret, in Ashkenazi communities, they don't do Birkat Chaanim. They don't do it on Yomim Tovim and Yomim Raim. So it says in the Siddur, in the Shiva house, don't say the Siddur does not say the Birkat Kohanim in the repetition in the Shiva house. And certainly you shouldn't say the actual Birkat Kohanim in the Shiva house. And Rav Nevesa holds like that, and that's the Mishnah Berurah brings down that halacha. However, the minhag in Yerushalayim is to yes to Birkat Kohanim in the Shiva house, even though it seems to go against the halacha. So I was once in the Shiva house, and I'm a Kohen, and Rav Nemesol was there, and someone else was saying I should, and Rav Nemesol kind of said no, and then he just sat quietly, and someone else pushed me up and told me to do it. So I kind of did argue with him once, but...
How you can be a vegetarian Kohen?
No, I'll have the best appetite of any of the Kohen in there. Saving myself. In the footnotes, I mean, he says Rosh Hashanah Zalman says there's no chiyuv. In the footnotes, he says there is. He brings other people who argue and say there is. But that is really interesting. Halicha Shlomo. Maybe if I say it, I'll be able to look it up. It's on Hebrew bookstore.org. Has Halicha Shlomo. No, there's Milcha Shlomo. Halicha Shlomo is the Talmidim. Yeah. But we don't have to probably write Halicha Shlomo. It's not really interesting. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Thank you very much. So there is no chiyuv of Talmud Torah on the Shabbat. Okay, so it's fine. But Eretz Shabbat, there is a chiyuv Talmud Torah. Yeah. So why do we not do it? So it says, the ein adam lamed el mashli bo chafetz. The person doesn't learn. The person only learns what he wants to learn. They don't. If you say you've got to learn this, and I say I mean something else, then he's not going to learn it. So we're not going to at all. If you say that. All the other things are after. Al ken da'ato la'akel b'zeh, therefore Ma'am Mordechai says to be lenient. V'katav v'ken haya un'aik erev sayin sham. He also used to learn Torah on Yom Shabbat. V'chai Adam katav to chumra ba'alma. Chayru says it's just a chumra. Al ken nira demisha se la'akel b'zeh en mochin b'yadol. Therefore, says Mishnah Berurah, it seems to me that if someone wants to be lenient and learn regular Torah on erev tisha b'av, then there's no problem, and if it falls on Shabbat, there's no problem at all in learning. This is even during the week. It's an extra stringency. On Shabbat, certainly there's no reason. But I don't know why there is a minhag to not say Pirkei. I mean, there is a minhag not to say Pirkei Avot on the Shabbat if it falls on Shabbat. Okay. Now, switching from Halacha to Hashka, to whatever. Everybody knows why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And everyone's got a different opinion. And everyone's right. But I will have a look at some of these sources and I'll say why I think the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and what the implications of that are. Okay, so this is the Gemara in Shabbat. I'm Rabbi Acha bar Chanina. So it's a very, very, every time I learn this Gemara, it's the wrong word, but it's a very scary Gemara. I'm Rabbi Acha bar Chanina. Me'olam lo yasa mida hava miti HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'chazar ba l'ra'a chutz midavar zeh. It never happened that God said something good was going to happen and it became bad. There are many times that God said something bad was going to happen and it turned out to be good, that God changed it. Like in Nineveh, for example, God is going to destroy Nineveh. I know he didn't really say that, but he led Yonah to believe he was going to destroy Nineveh. The people thought it was going to be destroyed, and then they did Tshuva, and God changed his mind, and no, God didn't change his mind. But Nineveh was not destroyed. Bad things can become good, but good things never become bad. If God says something good is going to happen, bad things doesn't become bad, except for this one example, one exception. Tachsiv in Yecheskel, v'yomar Hashem I love, avor b'tach ha'ir, b'tach Yerushalayim, v'hetiv Beta, Tav al Mitzchot Ha'anashim, Hanenachim, Vanenachim, Al Kaz Vavot, Hanatobat Ocha, Vigomet. God says to the angel, go through the city and into Yerushalayim, and I think it's Beta, write the letter Taf on the forehead of all of the people who are groaning and sighing for all of the abominations or disgusting things that they've done in the midst of the city. In other words, all the people who have sinned should have a little tuft mark on their head, like the sheep. The ones that are going off to slaughter, you put a mark on their back with the spray paint, and then you know which ones are going to be eaten and which ones are going to last till next year. Same thing over here, God tells the angel to put a mark on everyone's forehead who's going to not have a very happy ending. I'm going to have Gemara asked, do I put the answer here or not? I have to put the answer. And I don't remember, what's it asked? I don't remember. Answer something.
Okay.
Possibly Torah, but I don't remember. I'm sorry. You want to look it up? Have you got it tomorrow?
Yeah.
The button. You can look it up and come back to the answer. Be the looker-upper. Put a little tablet in the front. I'm going to approach Rafa the Gabriel. Right, that's just a pasuk. God said to Gabriel is the explanation of it. God said to Gabriel, Lech Rishom al Mitzchan Shal Tzadikim Tav Shal Diyom Shalo Yishu Bahem Malachai Chabala. Go and put a little tap in ink on the forehead of the Tzadikim so that the damaging angels won't have any power over them. Lech Mitzchan Shal Shayim Tav Shal Dam, put a tap of blood on the forehead of the wicked. So that the Malachi Chabala will be able to attack them. Amr Mida Zadin, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the attribute of justice is to God, Ribono Shel Olam, Ma Zman Yirvez, Ma Nishno Elo Me'elo. Why are you making a distinction between the Tzadikim and the Rishayim, between the righteous and the wicked? Why are you distinguishing? Amr La, so God says, what are you talking about? Halal Tzadikim Gemurim, Halal Rishayim Gemurim. These ones are completely righteous, and these ones are completely wicked. Amr lefana, so the attribute of justice is to God, yes, but Rabbanu Shalom, Mas Mirus, Hayabi Adam Limchot, Velom Michu. They could have objected, they could have protested, they could have done something to try and prevent the wicked from doing what they were doing, and they didn't protest. Amr la, God says, yes, but Galud Yadua lefana, Yashim, Michu Behem, Loi Kabru Mehem. God says, I know they could have, but it wouldn't have worked. I know that it would have made no difference. Even if they would have protested, even if they would have tried to encourage people to do the right thing, the wicked people weren't interested in listening, they wouldn't have done anything. Amr Lefanav, the meter of justice, says, Ribono Shel Olam, Im Lefanecha Galui, Lehem Mi Galui. Says, even though you knew that, they didn't know that. The fact that it wouldn't have helped should not stop them from trying to get people to do the right thing and to become righteous and to stop sinning. And therefore, the continuation of the Gemara is that it's not the next source, it's actually wrong. Can you go down a tad? Yeah, okay. The continuation of the source is that God said to Gabriel, put a tarp on everybody's head, they're all going to get destroyed. And the tarp is because?
Well, there's been an opposite scenario where they put a tarp on all the Tzadikim. And then, someone had it a second ago, says, Amara, help to hear, help someone.
Thank you.
Tamat
and Chutavot. Okay, and there's a Tafs word there, I think. Is that Tamat and Chutavot? No. Yeah. Tamat and Chutavot.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so the Tafs stands for Techiah and Tamut, you'll live and you'll die, or it stands for Tam Chutavot. The merit of the patriarch has run out. The enough time has passed. And Tosfot says, what does Tosfot say? Even though Chutavot finished, the Brit Avot is still.
No, because
it's Chutavot Taman,
but
Brit
Avot, not Taman.
Right, we've still got Brit Avot, even today. That's all right, thank you very much. That's a useful Tosfot because it gives us a chance. Others will be finished. So from this Gemara, we see that the wicked were killed because they were wicked, and the righteous were killed because they didn't try and do anything to stop the wicked people being wicked. Even though it wouldn't have helped, it would have made no difference. There's an obligation on a person, an obligation on everybody to try and prevent people from doing things that anger God. Good. Fine. No, it's good. You've done well. Thank you. Thank you very much. The Gemara in Gittin, if I say it's a famous Gemara, you'll you'll say, go with it. It really is. Everyone knows this Gemara, so I'll just do it quickly. But I'm not sure everybody, whatever, okay. The Gemara says, Kamsa Bar Kamsa Chav Yerushalayim. Because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Jerusalem is destroyed. Now, I've heard people say, in fact, I've probably said it myself, what did Kamsa do in the story? You know the story, right?
Yeah.
Kamsa, Bar Kamsa, everyone knows the story. So what did Kamsa do? He wasn't invited to a party, and he didn't go. And because of that, Jerusalem was destroyed, whereas the guy who actually did cause the trouble is, I mean, what did Pearl Kamsa do? That's the question that is often asked. I think it's just a mistake. So, with respect, because the next line in the Gemara, or the previous line really, is Tarnagola, Tarnagolta, Haruv Beta. It doesn't mean these people, it means the story involving these characters was what led to the structure of Beit HaMikdash. Not that these, on the mix-up between the names Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, that's why Jerusalem was destroyed. And what that led to, not because this person and that person, and to exempt everybody else, in fact the opposite. We'll see who the real culprits are of you. Kamsa Kamsa Nechav Yishnayim, Chav Yishnayim, Tahu Kavra Derachme Kamsa Obal Zivivi Bar Kamsa. There was a certain bloke who was very friendly with a chap called Kamsa and was brogus with a guy called Bar Kamsa. Avat Sudasa, he made a chasana, invited him to a big party. Amalei Lishame Zil Aitiri Kamsa, he said to his servant, who must be new to the job and didn't realize who were the good guys, who were the bad guys in his master's book, he said, go and bring Kamsa to the wedding. Azalai Flei Bar Kamsa. So the servant went and by mistake brought Bar Kamsa, who he hated. Ata, so Bar Kamsa, now I think, certainly at this point, I think Bar Kamsa is a real hero, because he's just been invited to a party by his worst enemy, and he goes. I mean, there are many people.
He thinks, and
he's prepared to make up. He's going to go along to that, even like he thinks this is the olive branch of peace, and he goes along, which is more than many people would do. Ata Ashkei Dava Yatsi. So he came along and he sat down, and the Balabayat saw that he was sitting at the table. Amalei Michti, and he said, "Hang on a sec. Hahu Gavra Bal Devava Dahu Gavra." Oh. You're my sworn enemy. My bait hacha, what are you doing here? Kum puk, get up, get out. Amalei, so Bar Kamsa said back, listen, ha'il ver atai, shavkan. I realize now it was a mistake, I'm terribly sorry, but I don't want to be embarrassed to get up and leave in the middle, so let me just stay here, leave me alone. Ve'ahim nilach demei mada achilna. Let me stay and I'll pay for whatever I eat. Won't cost you anything. Just let's not cause a scene, and we'll go back to how things work. Hey, so, drink. Amalei lo. So the balabai, the guy who's making the wedding, we don't know what his name is. He says no way. I don't want you at my party, even if you're paying for it, your own food. Amalei yahiv nalach demei palga sudasech. He says, I'll pay for half the whole meal. I'll pay for half of it. Amalei lo, no way. Amalei yahiv nalach demei kula sudasech. I mean, I guess Bar Kamsa is a little bit, whatever, he's doing everything he can to avoid making a scene. He's had to pay a high price to not make a scene. I'll pay for the entire meal, and I'll buy you a kitchen apartment in Yerushalayim. Amalei, lo, no way. Nasi biyade, v'okmei v'afkei. The Balabai picked him up by the scruff of the neck, threw him out the door. Okay, that's the story, and then he goes off to Rome, and he gets the season. The next line, though, is, I think, the key line. Amar, Bar Kamsa said to himself, Ho'il, v'havu yadve rabbanan, v'lon mechu bay. Since all the rabbis were at the chasna, the whole top table is full of rabbis. And they didn't say anything. Sh'mamina ka'nichalehu. I see that they're quite happy with this guy throwing people out. They don't mind embarrassing people in public. And therefore, ezel v'echol v'ekotze v'emapa. And because the rabbis didn't protest, this guy hates me, he's always going to hate me, he always has hatred of me, that's what happens. But nobody said anything, especially the rabbis who were sitting there, didn't say anything to prevent this happening. That's why he's going to go and get Yerushalayim destroyed. That's why Jerusalem was destroyed. Not because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa as such, but because the people who saw that happen, nobody stood up for him, nobody said let's sort this out, let's do something about it. Standing by and watching people do things that are wrong is a sin which leads to the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, and a sin which leads to destruction for the people as well, as on the first thought. And this year, I think this is a really important message for Tisha B'Av and for the 3 weeks and for the 9 days and everything else, that we will talk about Lashon Hara, we talk about Tina Pina and all those kinds of things, which are all true and all important. But I don't think we talk enough about our responsibility to other people, to stand up for other people who are being wronged, to look out for others, to make sure that other people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now, it's really not easy, though, to tell somebody else off. There's many, many reasons why you might not want to tell somebody else off. First of all, you may say, who am I going to tell this person? I mean, they're not going to listen to me anyway, or I haven't got the chutzpah to go to that person who's much more important or bigger or better or whatever than me, and I can't tell them I've done something wrong. I mean, just, you know, I don't know. Sometimes you see someone doing something like, accidentally does something, and you're embarrassed to go and tell them they've done something stupid because, like, you don't want to, you don't feel, right? Halakha is, you've got an obligation to go and tell them if you see them doing something wrong. Number one. Number two, you think they might not listen to you, or they might get cross with you, or you might lose a friend if you tell them off. So there's two parts to this. Of course, you have to tell them in a way that they're going to, that there's a chance they'll be able to listen to you. To go out and point out to everyone what they're doing wrong, that's not rebuke, that's just having fun. That's what a lot of people are very good at saying, look at him, look at him, look at that. If you've been a shul rabbi, you've ever given a sermon trying to, like, address a certain point, you'll notice that the people you're speaking to are busy nodding and smiling because they think you're talking about the guy next to them and not to them. So to always point out everyone else's flaws is very easy to do, to notice them and to point them out. But to try and speak to a person in a way that they'll be able to listen and realize they've done something and can help them change is very, very difficult. So that's one part of the problem.
As a very flawed person, how can one feel like they are able, even if they know something is wrong that someone else is doing, how can...
I'm not perfect. How can I start talking about anybody else and glass houses and stones and pot and kettle and black and white? You're right.
So, like, you don't know the whole situation, something else. Like,
you're right. So you've got to know. If you don't know the whole situation, then you can, I mean, I don't know. It depends on the circumstances. If you see something thrown out of a wedding, I'm sure everyone said, I don't know the whole story. There must be some reason. He probably brought some trade food to them or something. I don't know what. There must be a really good reason why they didn't say anything. But in that case, make it your job to find the whole story and work out how I was speaking to the person. The fact that I'm flawed and how can I therefore speak to anybody else is a real, it's a double problem because I won't have the self-confidence to speak to somebody else because I know it's my problem. And I also, like the one in Shostak, the Gemara learns from the beginning of Megillat Rut, the beginning of Shoftim, it says, Vayi b'mei Shvata Shoftim. The thing is, Gemara, maybe Midrash Gemara says, that the people used to judge their judges. And the judges say, you've done this crime, and they say, you've done even worse crimes. So that's a real problem. And I think that comes down to the way you say it to somebody. I think there's ways of saying, I know I'm not perfect, I have the same, I've done the same thing, whatever, but I just, you know, as a friend, I'd just like to point this out to you. You can't, or sometimes you really can't say anything. There are certainly people who, if you try and say something to them, it is definitely awkward. You've got to get past the awkward turtle stage to be able to do this, and it's really hard. But I don't, and again, I'm not advocating going up to people and saying, you did that wrong, you did that wrong, and the heksher wasn't good on that, and blah, blah, blah. Right, that's not what we're talking about.
You know that they'll appreciate,
Yes, but I don't think you should say you shouldn't be washing your car on Shabbos.
What's an example of what you can say to an unrelated person? Oh, it's also relative.
I can't even think of saying anything. If you've ever been in your life a rabbi in need, and you've ever walked the shul, you'll notice that all the cars driving, well, she's driving home because no one comes to the beginning of shul. When you're walking home from shul, you'll see that half the cars have got no one driving. because everyone sees the rabbi and ducks down like this, they don't notice as they go past.
Well, they're above it, and they agree and face
up on me. Because they got the shiat to join. Yes, they're above. No, okay. Coming home from Shabbos morning.
Okay.
Shabbos morning. And you'll see they're ducking down. That's someone who's not religious by conventional standards, but the fact that they're ducking down because they're embarrassed to be seen, I think means they're not religious. They are religious, and I think that there's many ways of speaking to that kind of a person. You're not going to get a person to start keeping all the mitzvahs straight away.
But right, I think if they wind down the window and say, hi, Rabbi.
Come off your list.
Yeah.
That just means they don't know any better. I think there are things that you can say. It is theoretical. There exists a class of people who can say things to a class of other people that can't be heard. There's no point in saying things in a way that will make antagonize and make them less interested. And there's no point in expecting a person by telling them something which they can't possibly do. But I think that there are a lot of small steps. It's not a religion or non-religion. Everybody is somewhere on a, probably everybody is everywhere on a sliding scale of religion or non-religious. And I think to move somebody, to help somebody move themselves from point A to point B is also a thing. But as well as that, there's also, Kamps and Bar Kamps wasn't a religious issue. They weren't doing it because he was doing shatnez or because he, something or other. It was just a fundamental human kindness issue, which applies to someone who's religious or non-religious. If you see somebody behaving in a way that's not appropriate, regardless of there's certain things which that's not how people should behave. And again, I don't know, you don't know the whole story, you don't know why they're behaving like that and the whole history, but if you think there's any way that you can in some way mediate between them or fix the situation, you've got an obligation to do so. And from this first thought, it looks though, even if you don't think you're going to be able to change the situation, you've got an obligation to do so. The Gemara in Tamid goes even further about the length you've got to go in order to rebuke somebody, even if they're going to hit you for it. You've got to go and tell them. But I'm not sure. We come down to nowadays, even in the time of the Gemara. If you go up to somebody and say, you're doing it all wrong, you messed up, it's no good, they're not going to listen to you. Most normal people are not going to listen to you, and they're going to get upset rather than kind. The question is, it's a difficult thing. Apart from the awkwardness, which is difficult, and apart from many other issues, the most difficult thing is to speak to a person in a way that they're going to want to listen to what you're saying. And I think we've all made mistakes of trying to do that, but hopefully we can learn from our mistakes and try and figure out ways of doing speaking in a way that does help. So, the Gemara says explicitly, Laich harvi yishraim ela b'shrei shalach echiach ze'ezbe. The reason Jerusalem is destroyed is only because they did not refute one another. So they let people get away with whatever they wanted. Nobody was there to say, that's not right. There's something funny going on over here. I've got to make a stand. And the idea, I mean, this is an idea which is really not, the social protests of last year and possibly going to be this year are fundamentally an idea of tachacha. So the people are protesting what they see as an unfairness in the system, inequality, and they're trying to rebuke the government or the wealthy people ever to try and make things better. Now, whether it works, I don't know whether it works or doesn't work, but what they're trying to do is an idea of tachacha. I'm not advocating whether it's right way or the wrong way. I don't even know whether it is or isn't.
Tachacha is when you see someone else doing wrong. It doesn't affect you, The protesters,
you capitalist, you.
Why are they protesting about tycoons in Egypt? Because it doesn't affect them.
Possibly. Or possibly because they know they have no voice in Egypt. Whereas, and maybe that's irrelevant because you've got an obligation to talk about anyway, but there's a chance that the government would listen. I don't really claim that talk applies to government. But I do, all I'm saying is that the motivation, the concept of tachacha is not a religious concept. And it can be done in a good way or not a good way by everybody, anybody, regardless of their religion or their level of religiosity. That there are ways of doing it, ways of not doing it. You can destroy a person by giving them tochachah in the wrong way. I don't like the education system in this country sometimes, but I do feel that sometimes they destroy kids' self-image. A kid works really hard and tries to do something, and then they get knocked down by a teacher who's probably told them something they needed to hear, but in a way that was the wrong way, and they just give up on the whole system after that. I think that when we give tochachah to somebody, and it doesn't have to be a child, to anybody, we can really make a huge positive difference or a huge negative difference, and if you're not sure, then it's better to not say anything at all than to risk making a negative impact on a person. Which again is part of knowing the whole story and knowing how to speak to the person. It's not one thing, it's everything together. So whatever the punishment is for not giving tochachah, to stand and throw rocks at cars on Shabbos, or to go and attack police on Shabbos and call that tochachah, I think is not tochachah. And you might say, I'm doing my mitzvah, I've got to protest, and I'm protesting. I don't believe that's at all what's being spoken about here, and that's just called chil l'shem. And certainly turns people off, does the opposite of whatever tochachah is supposed to be. Shlomo HaMelech says, Mochiach adam acharei chen yimza limachlik lashon. Ultimately, somebody who rebukes somebody else, that person will like them more than somebody who just schmoozes them up the whole time. If you keep telling somebody that's great, you're surrounding yourself with yes men.
And then it sounds like that one is the right cookie. Rather than just saying delicious. Which it always is.
I see.
But always. Sometimes always. Probably always.
Great.
Husbands have to be very, very careful. That can be tough. That's
diplomatic.
Well, yes.
But other people, the
real should
know that she likes to hear it. But they don't know anything you're doing.
Other people
don't. No, but like, if they hear you say something bad about her food, they'd be like, oh my god, that's a horrible thing to say. You should say the bad thing and then say, Sam wants to hear it. Yeah.
Or possibly don't do it right in the middle of the meeting.
Yeah.
Honey, this is disgusting. No thanks. I don't want this one. Yeah, no, that's not going to work. anyhow, yes. Someone told me, you probably know these people, the wife told me that she was so frustrated because the first week after they got married, she made whatever kind of food it was, and how it turned out it was. He said, yes, it's delicious, yum. So she made it every single Shabbos from then on. After about a year, she ran out of ingredients, and he said, actually, I don't really like that particular ingredient. Whatever it is. Why didn't you tell me a year ago? But doing the other, whatever. It's not easy. It's not meant to be easy. Fine. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Amir, Eivrei Derech Yishara Sheyavor Lo Adam. What is here's from the rebuke E side of point. What is the best path a person should choose for themselves? Be a habit of tochachah. They should enjoy it when people tell them they're doing the wrong thing. I know I find that with myself. Somebody tells me I'm doing something wrong. My first reaction is, no, I'm not, and who are you telling me about that anyway? But I try, sometimes I'm able to do it, to just say thank you very much, and then think about whether they're right or wrong, because sometimes they're right, sometimes I'm not perfect. And either way, appreciate, even if they're doing it not in a nice way or not for the right reasons, certainly if they are doing it in the right way and for the right reasons, I guess before we start rebuking others, we should try and make sure that we're able to hear it when others give us advice. Again, you don't have to listen to everything that everybody says to you, because then you'll just be a dishrag and not a person. But you can at least say thank you and appreciate the fact they've overcome the awkwardness and all the other issues to say it. Or maybe not, maybe they should enjoy going and saying things to Shechot mancha tochachot ba'olam. As long as there is rebuke in the world, as long as people are telling each other how to behave, nachat ruach ba'olam, then pleasantness comes to the world. Tava or bracha ba'olam, goodness and blessing come to the world. Ram is saleket men olam, and evil leaves the world. Shneimar, as it says, Mochim yinaim v'aleim tava bracha birchas tov. That to those who give rebuke shall be delight, and a good blessing shall come upon them. So the goal, this is a much, well not easy, but a more doable goal, is to make a resolution to try and listen when people tell us they're doing something wrong, and accept it in a good way. And that person gets help because it's called Mochechet Chavro Lashem Shemayim Moshchin Alav Chut Shel Chesed. God's going to help them if they're doing it Lashem Shemayim, if they're telling that somebody they're doing something wrong. Not for whatever, many other reasons. If they're doing it for Lashem Shemayim, then God's going to give them a Chut Shel Chesed, which means they've got a half decent chance of the person at least not clobbering them. And again, same idea on Joe Nathan. I have it, I'm Mochiach. The love the one who tells you off and hate the one who praises you all the time. You find this very often in pyramid structures when you've got a boss at the top of the heap and no one wants to tell the boss they've done something wrong or they made a mistake or you're doing, because I mean, a good boss will want to hear the real thing, but a bad boss or someone who's not necessarily in touch is going to surround themselves with people who say yes, but any system, and not only in the employment situation. People at the top like to be told they're doing the right thing, and anyone who disagrees may not, in fact, be there in that position for much longer. And it should be the other way around. Ideally, the more people who tell you you're doing something wrong, the better chance you've got of getting it right. And I think that possibly the companies that do have it that way around, I mean, I guess too many reasons why companies do want, don't want, so I'm not even going to try and do that, but just by Malcolm Gladwell book in this somewhere. The one who's telling you off is going to bring you to Olam Haba. The one who's praising you is just removing you from this world. So, obvious. However, and this is a really key thing, which kind of undoes everything I've said so far. So I'm a Ritafon. Ritafon is a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. Beit Shammai Nick, who became switched allegiance and came to Beit Hillel, a little bit of an outsider, but Rabban Gamliel, he's actually at the Seder, right, in B'nai Brak. So he says, as we're talking about 150 CE, it's a long time ago, he says, Amar Ritafon, Tama Ani Yesh B'dor Azeh Mishi Yachol Lachiyach. I would be amazed if there was a single person in this generation who knew how to give Tachacha. If somebody says to somebody else, "Take, you've got something stuck between your teeth," you've got something stuck between your eyes. Because Not only is none who can give tachacha, I don't think there's even anyone who can accept tachacha. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Tamani im yesh b'dor hazeh shiyodeh lachiyah. I don't think there's anyone who knows how to do it properly. And if that was true then, how much more so is that true now? That people don't know how to do it properly. So if you're going to embark on a career of giving tachacha, make sure you're doing it in a way that at least is not doing more harm than good. And as one of the says, k'shem shemitzvah lama dvar hanishma. I'm not sure, this is not talking about tachacha. And this seems to contradict the Gemara in Shabbat, which says you've got to do it even if the person's not going to listen. But I'm not sure, like you're learning, I'm not sure there's a patur, or just no way of actually doing the mitzvah. Shem shemitzvah lamad va nishma, kach mitzvah shelo lamad va shehena nishma. Just as the mitzvah to say something will be heard, it's also a mitzvah to not say something that won't be heard. So don't say something that's going to be negative. There is halacha lamaita, the Chazan Ish, uses this concept to remove the basically to make everyone to tinuk shenishma. Halachic categories of person is a mumar or a nafikoros or whatever, and there's halachic nafkaminis for a person is a nafikoros and they can't do certain things. And whenever the Chazan Ish in the beginning of Yerodeah, the Shulchan Aruch talks about who's kosher to shechita, who's not kosher to shechita, and a mumar le'tehavon and a mumar le'hachif, whatever. And the Chazan Ish there goes off on a tangent about the definitions of these terms, and he says, since the definition of an apikoros, a heretic, one we have many. Just like Eskimos have many words for snow, Jews have many words for heretic. So one of them is Abikoros. It may be means to Epicurus, or it may not be. And anyway, somebody who does sins willfully, let's go to a mumar lahachim. Somebody who does sins intentionally or willfully, so has a certain halachic status associated with them. The the Chazon Ish says, this doesn't just mean somebody does the wrong thing, it means they do the wrong thing, and somebody's told them it's the wrong thing, and they still keep on doing it anyway. He says, nobody nowadays is able to tell somebody else that they're doing the wrong thing in a way that's going to be heard, in a way they're going to listen, in a way that's going to be meaningful, and therefore you can never assume that somebody's in this category of intentionally rebelling against God, because they never heard. Chances are that nobody ever sets them in the right way for them to hear, and therefore halakhically he vindicates all of the so-called sinners and makes them into unintentional sinners, which has all sorts of halakhic implications in all sorts of areas. So this idea of not having tachta is a good defense for those people who don't behave properly, but I'm not sure it's a defense for those people who don't even try to solve it. If you see something wrong happening, you're supposed to get involved and try and make it happen in a correct way. And again, it's not necessarily about halakha, it's not about frumkeit, it's not about religion, it's about helping someone to do something that's a great thing. This Gemara may be centered out of your Gemara, depending on which version you have. It's a similar Gemara. You've got Oz Vahada, it's in there. It's in there, but it's not in many others. You can tell the pages that have got things centered out of them, because most of the pages of the Gemara are like this, and there's a couple of pages like this. The big white space left at the bottom, so usually a safe bet that something's been removed from there. Now, there's a story about Jesus, which is kind of cool because the Gemara talking about Jesus. I must tell you that it's probably not... it's probably not our Jesus. If you look in the book Seder HaDorot, which is a history book, a medieval history book, he has either three or four different dates when Jesus was born. This particular Jesus, the Tosfot HaRosh at the end of Sota, says is not the Jesus who founded Christianity, he's someone else, because Yeshua ben Prachya lived too early to be a contemporary of Jesus. Jesus was a contemporary of Hillel, and Hillel is a Talmud of Shammai and Artalion, who are themselves Talmudim of Yeshua ben Prachya and Yehuda ben Tabai. No, Yeshua ben Prachya and I mean, Zain Perkiyah was not even Erev Tisha B'Av. Two generations too early.
Can I ask why he wouldn't be able
to... The censors removed at the Christian censors. The Christian censors went through the Gemara and crossed off all sorts of things that they thought were making fun of their religion. And only in the last few years. There was a book, there is a book which has all the censored bits that have been taken out of the Gemara all in one book. But in the last, I think Steinbach may have been the first one to put these bits back into the Gemara. So in the recent past, they put them back in the last few years. There was in medieval, there were many debates between in the 14th, 15th century, 13th, 14th, 15th century, debates between Christians and Jews. And the Christians obviously wanted to prove that Jesus was the Messiah, and the Jews wanted to prove that he wasn't the Messiah. And one of the arguments one of the arguments the Jews used was try and predate Jesus as early as possible, because something was going to happen for 400 years. I think it was going to be 400 years after Jesus, after the Messiah's birth. It was going to last for 400 years, and they wanted to move Jesus earlier to make sure. No, sorry, 40 years. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They found, the Christians had a verse that connected the coming of the Messiah with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and they wanted to say that 40 years after he was born, there was going to be, or 40 years after he died, there was going to be the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, So if he was born in the year zero and died at age 33 or something, based on stories in 70, that's 40 years. So the rabbis in the medieval period, which is not the Gemara, but they wanted to say that Jesus lived earlier than that, so this prophecy wouldn't be fulfilled according to the Christian interpretation of the book. That's a total tangent, which I only half got right, so we can ignore that. There is a story, anyway, about Yeshua ben Prachya. Tosafot Rosh says this is a different Jesus because he lived in the time of Yeshua ben Prachya, not the time of Hillel. But it says, the Gemara says, the Gemara says you should always, when rebuking somebody, when reproaching a student, you should always, if you're pushing with your left hand, you should bring them close with your right hand. Now, the right hand is a stronger arm, so you should bring them closer, give them more warm fuzzies than what else is warm fuzzy? Don't know. Something else very nice. Whatever. A cold spiky. If you're telling somebody off, do it in a way that makes them feel good about themselves. And the Gemara gives two examples of people who did not do this, but if they pushed away with two hands. One is Elisha, who pushed away Gehazi, his student, with two hands. But that story is not as exciting as the one of Jesus, so I thought I'd do this one instead. So it says, Lo Yeshua ben Prachya shedachfor liyeshu hanotzri v'shtei yadav. Don't do like Yeshua ben Prachya did, who pushed Jesus, the Nazarite, away with two hands. Yeshua ben Prachya mighty, so what's the story of Yeshua ben Prachya? Kidakat linhu Yanai Malka Lirabana. Yanai, King Yanai, became a Sadducee. It's Duki. He's known also as John Hyrcanus, I think in the English, the Greek sources. So Yanai Malach killed off all the rabbis who were not Sadducees. He put the Dukim in the Sanhedrin and killed off anybody else. So Yeshua ben Prachya ran away. Azul Yeshua ben Prachya v'Yeshua l'Afsanj Alexandria shel Mitzrayim. So Yeshua ben Prachya with his close student Yeshua went to Alexandria. The only person who could stay in Yerushalayim was Shimon ben Shetach, because his sister was married to Yanai Melech, and she was able to hide him in a way that he didn't get killed, which was useful for him. So Kihava Shalma, when Yanai got over it and allowed the rabbis to come back, Shalach lei Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach, who'd been hiding the whole time in Yerushalayim and now was able to come out, he sent a message to Yeshua ben Prachya. He said, Mini Yerushalayim, Yerakodesh, Leichi, Alexandria, Shem Mitzrayim. I sent a letter from me in Yerushalayim, all the city to you in Alexandria in Egypt. Achoti, Bali, Shuri, Betochech, Vanachi, Yashav, Shamema. My sister, my husband is dwelling in your midst, and I'm sitting desolate. In other words, he's sending a coded message saying, come back to Yerushalayim now, it's safe, and we need you here. So come, Asa, Yeshua ben Prachya, along with Yeshua, got up to go back to Yerushalayim. Ve'etrami le'ahu ushpiza. They stayed the night in a hotel, and the hotelier, I don't have to say hotelier in female, the hotelier, anyway, the innkeeper's wife was really looked after and extra specially gave him the special rabbinic treatment. After the Yakra Tuva, she went out of her way to make it a pleasant stay for them there. Amo, so Yeshua ben Prachya said to Yeshu, Kami yafech san yezo. What a great... I always understood this Gemara meaning that the host is really looking after us in a good way. Right, really nice, but it could be that achsanya means the place we're staying is a really good place. Anyway, Amar Lei, so Yeshu didn't realize he was speaking about the way that she was acting, but so he still made her look. Said, really, Einea, true thought, she's got beautiful eyes as well. And when he said, Kama Yafeh, how beautiful she is, he meant she's looking after us really nicely. Yeshu thought he was saying she's good looking. Amalei Rasha, Yeshua and Prachya said, you wicked person, the Kachatasek, I've thought of teaching you Torah, and you thought I was telling you dirty stories the whole time. Why are you, that's what you've been thinking all along every time I said something? Afik Avmei Shifuri V'Shamte, so he took out 400 announcers and excommunicated him. I think that's probably an exaggeration, but anyway, he excommunicated Yeshu. So after the Kamezim and Yeshu did tshuva. Now the halacha is, you've known this in the era of Rosh Hashanah, if somebody comes to you, or if you've done something to hurt somebody else, you want to go to them and ask them, tell them you're sorry, then you have to go up to three times to them and say, please forgive me. If after that they don't forgive you, then they become the wicked person. You've done the best you can do. That's true between two friends or two people. But if it's a student to his teacher, then he's got to keep coming even 100 times. There's no upper limit. The teacher technically has the right to refuse to forgive the person until he thinks they've learned their lesson. That's part of the educational process. I would mitigate that with this story, which says, don't do this. But anyway, Yeshu came back many, many times to Yeshua ben Prachya. Amalei Kavlan, he said, please, let me back in. I'm sorry. Whatever. But I have a Kamashkech say. And Yeshua ben Prachya dissed him. He didn't pay any attention to him at all, didn't let him in. Yom Achad, like a Kari Kriya Shema, one day, this is the most unfortunate time in Kriya Shema, one day, Yeshua ben Prachya was saying Shema. After they come in, just at that moment, Yeshu came to ask him again for forgiveness. Sarva Likibule. So this time Yeshua ben Prachya thought, he's got it, I'm going to let him back in now, fine. So he went like, Achbe Le Biale, he said like that, because he's saying Shema. So hang on a second, I'm just in the middle of saying Shema, and I'm going to, if you listen to this on the tape, and I'm going like that, it's not going to help you very much, but just make it up, just something with your hand. So he went like that, like as if I'm saying Shema, hang on a second, and I'll let you come back in. But Hu Sava Yeshu thought he was saying, Mitcha Zachilei, get the heck out of here, I don't want to ever see you again, you abominable, filthy, slimy. So Azal, so Yeshu, like, I've had enough of this. He went, Zakap Levinta, he stood up a brick, Vishtachavela, and he bowed down to it. And started worshiping idols. That's another reason why it's probably isn't our Jesus, because their Jesus, because that's not part of the Jesus story that we have in the New Testament either. But anyway, he became a high priest of idolatry. So Amalei, then Yeshua ben Prachya went to Jesus now, and he said to him, Hadabach, do tshuva. Amalei, Yeshua said back, Kach mekubani mincha. Sorry, mate, you told me the following thing. The kolachoteh u'mastir sarabim, emaskim yadol asot tshuva. You told me that somebody who sins and causes other people to sin won't be able to do tshuva. Because if Yeshu does tshuva and he's singing Gan Eden, all of his Talmidim are in Gehenna, that's not very fair. So therefore, you told me, Yeshua, that I can't do tshuva now, so there's no point. But Amama Yeshu Kishev, he said the DFH Israel, and therefore Yeshu used magic and Hesif Ediyah, deception and led Israel astray. And let's start one word as well. So don't give rebuke in a way that's going to cause somebody to run off the other direction at all. I'm sure a large number of people who are off the derech are because somebody somewhere along the line said things to them in a way that they didn't need to say it, or was more worried about the length of their stockings than about how they are as a person, or more worried about said things, even if they were the right things, and certainly if they were the wrong things, said them in a way which was not appropriate or useful or helpful to that person. Oh, you clicked on the link. If you want something to read on Tisha B'Av, that's a book that I translated, which I have in there for you as well. It's a midrash of the Ten Martyrs. One of the key not we found Tisha B'Av is about the Ten Azeles Anod, is about the Ten Martyrs. And this is a translation of the story of the Ten Martyrs, with an introduction about why, how they didn't all live at the same time, what the point of the message is, and history of martyrdom. Not very pleasant reading, but then it's perfectly appropriate for Tisha B'Av. One thing I want to say in the final point is one that I keep saying over and over again, but I think that part of Tofa is just keep on saying it anyway to anyone who will listen, and even to those who won't, which is before you give Tochacha to somebody, whatever the thing is, make sure you know that what you're saying is the right thing, especially if it's something to do with religion. Don't go and tell somebody they're doing something wrong when actually it's not really wrong, it's just not the way you do things, but it's actually completely right from their point of view. And that can be the most damaging thing of all, to start looking at somebody who does things slightly different than you as a second-class Jew, because they don't do things my way. They don't eat the same hetero as I do, or they don't go to the same school that I do, or they don't wear the same clothes that I do, or they don't... Whatever the thing happens to be, they don't keep Shabbat the same way, they use the leniency that I don't like. We very easily tend to look down on people who may be doing things exactly correctly, or in keeping with their rabbis, or in keeping with some other tradition we don't even know about, and we judge them, we look down, we start telling them they're doing the wrong thing. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes, they put together, his family put together a book on Shulchan Aruch, his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. And this is something he said in a tape that they transcribed, which he said in the halachas of the 9 days. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mishan Nechmas, come on, tiny, says, Mishan Nechmas, Av Mim Atim B'Simcha. When Av begins, we minimize our enjoyment, our happiness. We cut back on things that are happy, and that's the basis of all of the 3 week and 9 day halachas. There is a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch about whether you're allowed to, one of the things we don't do during the 9 days, or if you're studying the week that's Shabbat for them, one of the things we don't do during the 9 days is wear freshly laundered clothes. Right? Now, parenthetically, Rosh Chodesh falls this Friday, so it doesn't apply to undergarments and things, but shirts and skirts and whatever. If you're planning on wearing them next week, you should wash them now and wear them for a little while in the next 2 days before Rosh Chodesh, and then you can wear them again for next week. There is a prohibition on wearing freshly laundered clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that as well. I don't know if that's not right, because I'm going to just tell you that other people have different opinions. To me, that doesn't seem to it doesn't. I don't. Well, I mean, it does. It does. It does take away the fresh. They're no longer freshly laundered, but I don't see a source that halacha. I don't see that mentioned anywhere until a fairly recent. It seems to me to be a recent invention, which is fine. And if somebody does it, that's fine. If you would ask me, I'd say it's better to wear it first, because that's what the halacha seems to say in my understanding of
it. As in, you could put it on and take it off straight away, or you have to wear it where?
That's a kind of... How can I... I don't know the answer, but you have to wear it. Is that 1 minute, 1.5 minutes, or 5 minutes, or 10 minutes? Put it on, iron the next shirt, and then take it off, and you don't have to wear it, especially in the heat.
Yeah.
I don't know what he has the answer. He tells you a definition over here. Okay. I don't believe there's any real number of how long it has to be worn for. You have to wear it. It doesn't mean just put it on, take it off straight away, but put it on, do something, and then take it. I mean, I don't, whatever. It's only 9 days. It's only 9 days.
Okay, then he said,
yes. The question is, Misha and Lubbock, I didn't know how we came to the Misha. Well,
for them,
there's no restriction on wearing it.
Yeah. And Bidiyavai is Echlech
Alekhah. Okay.
Putting on the clothes
is Bidiyavai, yeah. Again, there are people who do it. There's many, many people who that's what they do, and that's their custom, and but, yes.
What about showering?
So, the halacha, Shulchan Aruch, the Rama, I think, says not to wash. In not to wash for the 9 days. It depends where you lived, but in Poland at that time of the Rama, first, it's a different climate. Second of all, the minhag was that people wore little smelly things around their necks to save off the stench, because they used to shower only every infrequently.
Would they
put it on? There's a word for a bag of herbs and things.
Potpourri?
Something like potpourri. They wore an... anyway, there's a famous quote of Queen Victoria, who obviously is many hundreds of years after the Ramah, but Queen Victoria said she... What?
She was a huge
prosek. She said she had a bath once a year whether she needed it or not. So, yeah. So in that climate, then you certainly don't go and have your bath during that week. If your minhag is to have a shower once a day, or possibly even twice a day, I think you're in the category of istinus, which istinus, Daniel, how would you translate istinus? Very fragile, very... spoiled. which means we have even Rabban Gamliel in the Gemara. Gamliel Shulman Gamliel. The Mishnah, the Brachas, who when he was sitting Shiva, he had a shower, and the students said, but you're not allowed to shower, he said, yes, but I'm an Israelite. And he showered. So I think for a normal Western person in this day and age who's used to showering every day, I think showering every day is absolutely reasonable, especially in the heat when it could even get to be rather uncomfortable and unpleasant if you don't shower. But it's not a time to have a long soak in the bath and to use all the extra special scented soaps and things. Just have a quicker shower, cold shower if possible. On the heat, it's not such a hardship, or colder than usual and shorter than usual, whatever. Something that is not for pleasure, but just to clean yourself.
Moisturizer.
Yeah. Hand cream. That face cream way, but yeah, absolutely, there's no prohibition on that. Not on Tisha B'Av itself, but no problem during the 9 days.
So, and if you go down to wash 20 bottles,
exactly.
So you can shower, and then you're allowed to shower.
I think you can just step outside for a minute and have a shower. But the truth is, if it's on a day like today, I'd have a shower and shower with a long cold water. You wouldn't go outside. You've got air conditioning, but if you imagine someone didn't have air conditioning, you can, there's a hatch. Anyway, I'm not sure where Shabbos now. But I think there's a hatch in the shower. Or at least to wash your body bit by bit in cold water on Shabbos. Anyway, so you're not wearing your clean clothes during the 9 days. The question is on Shabbat, are you allowed to wear clean, freshly ironed clothes, which you wash iron before the 9 days, or do you continue wearing your dirty clothes? Right, so is there an exemption for Shabbat? That's the question. And the Ramah says, I think the Ramah, Shulchan Aruch says that even on Shabbat you don't wear clean clothes, you continue wearing the dirty clothes. Anyway, okay. So there are two minhagim about that. Some people say you can wear clean clothes on Shabbat, and some people say you cannot wear clean clothes on Shabbat. That's the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. I just want to read out the words of Ryakov Kamenetsky, because especially when we're talking about Tochacha and Tzina Achin, all those kinds of things, he put this here. He says, Zeo Masha Amra Torah, this is that when the Torah says, Ulmadatim Otam, Ushmatim La'asotam, you should learn them, learn the halachas, and then guard them to do them. Why does it say that? Da'inu Shechayim Kodam L'lmod Et HaMitzvot. A person has an obligation to learn the mitzvot. Leida Heitev Mahu Isidoraita, Mahu Isidorabanan. A person has to know well what is the Torah prohibition, what is the rabbinic prohibition, ma'u siyag, what is a rabbinic fence, or ma'u minhag ba'alman, what is a minhag. Vayinu she'ashmira la'asotam, if sharit rak ayidei ilumadatim otam. The only way you can guard to do the mitzvot is to learn about them first. You can't just copy what everyone else is doing. They won't get you to the right place. Lo'y day lo'y la'adam l'chakot kol tnu'ah she'oseh aviv. It's not enough to just copy everything your father does, or for Balei Tshuva to copy whatever your rabbi does. Whatever the person is that you look up to or admire in whatever part of life, you want to say, well, they do that, that must be the right thing, so I'm going to copy and do that as well. That's not good enough. Afilo im aviv tzadik amor, even if the father is completely righteous, and even if he's doing everything right, that's not considered sufficient. Mishum sha'az eno yadea imoseh hadavar machmad din, or minhag valma, because then, even though you'll be doing all the right actions, you won't know if you're doing them, because that's the halacha, or because that's the minhag. Or because that, whatever. From Izeh Bala Voal Isidoraita, because of that, if you don't know the difference between a minhag and a halacha, a person can come to do several Torah prohibitions, kasinat chinam, like baseless hatred, umachloket, or fighting, arguing, shem vada yisurei Torah. That's certainly a Torah prohibition. De kishiroeh hu achirim she'ena motzim kamina gaviv, when I see someone doing something different than the way my father does it, or whoever I'm copying does it. Choshev atam la'avarianim. I'm going to think that they're a sinner. Mimesh saver shehem avrim al gufei Torah. Because I'm going to think they're not doing it the way that I do it, therefore they're transgressing a Torah prohibition. Bobasman shehem avrim kamin hagavatam. And they're doing it the way their father does it, right? Which is also the correct way. Vohase kamin hagavatam. So there's different traditions. Then you transgress the prohibition of loving your neighbor as yourself. And don't hate your brother. And don't make different groups. Which is a prohibition against making a fight between people. So it's really important to know it's not just sufficient to look around what everyone else is doing and do that along with them and copy what they're doing. It's not sufficient to look in a book and see what the book says and just copy what the book says, because that's fine, that's one way of doing it, but that's going to lead to serious Torah prohibitions. The only way to be a good Jew, or a good human being, is to learn the halacha. The only way to keep the mitzvah is to learn the halacha, to learn what the halacha, what the Torah, like, what's rabbinic, what the minhag, what this local minhag, what the widespread accepted minhag, and see what are the bounds of accepted behavior, so that you can see what other people are doing and know whether they're right or wrong, and at the very least, understand that somebody else might be doing something which to you looks like completely forbidden, but actually maybe permitted. And certainly, I would say, before you go and give somebody tochacha for doing something that you think is rasa, make sure it really is out of them before you start doing it. And that's the end.